or in my job's worth to tell you that. Griphook held the door open for them. Harry, who'd expected more marble, was surprised. They were in a narrow stone passageway lit with flaming torches. It sloped steeply downward, and there were little railway tracks on the floor. Griphook whistled, and a small cart came hurtling up the tracks towards them. They climbed in, Hagrid with some difficulty, and were off. At first, they just hurtled through a maze of twisting passages. Harry tried to remember, left, right, left, middle four, right, left, but it was impossible. The rattling cart seemed to know its own way because Griphook wasn't steering. Harry's eyes stung as the cold air rushed past them, but he kept them wide open. Once he thought he saw a burst of fire at the end of a passage and twisted round to see if it was a dragon, but too late. They plunged even deeper, passing an underground lake where huge stalactites and stalagmites grew from the ceiling and floor. "I never know," Harry called to Hagrid over the noise of the car. "What's the difference between a stalagmite and a stalactite?"
"Stalagmite's got an M in it," said Hagrid. "And don't ask me questions just now. I think I'm going to be sick."
He did look very green, and when the car stopped at last beside a small door in the passage wall, Hagrid got out and had to lean against the wall to stop his knees from trembling. Griphook unlocked the door. A lot of green smoke came billowing out, and as it cleared, Harry gasped. Inside were mounds of gold coins, columns of silver, heaps of little bronze canuts.
"All yours," smiled Hagrid.
All Harry's. It was incredible. The Dursleys couldn't have known about this, or they'd have had it from him faster than blinking. How often had they complained how much Harry cost them to keep, and all the time there had been a small fortune belonging to him, buried deep under London. Hagrid helped Harry pile some of it into a bag.
"The gold ones are galleons," he explained. 17 silver sickles to a galleon, and 29 canuts to a sickle. It's easy enough."
"Right, that should be enough for a couple of terms. We'll keep the rest safe for you."
He turned to Griphook. "Vault 713 now, please, and can we go more slowly?"
"One speed only," said Griphook.
They were going even deeper now and gathering speed. The air became colder and colder as they hurtled round tight corners. They went rattling over an underground ravine, and Harry leaned over the side to try to see what was down at the dark bottom, but Hagrid groaned and pulled him back by the scruff of his neck. Vault 713 had no keyhole.
"Stand back,"
said Griphook importantly. He stroked the door gently with one of his long fingers, and it simply melted away.
"If anyone but a Gringotts goblin tried that, they'd be sucked through the door and trapped in there,"
said Griphook. "How often do you check to see if anyone's inside?" Harry asked.
"About once every 10 years, said Griphook, with a rather nasty grin.
Something really extraordinary had to be inside this top-security vault, Harry was sure. And he leaned forward eagerly, expecting to see fabulous jewels at the very least. But at first he thought it was empty. Then he noticed a grubby little package wrapped up in brown paper lying on the floor. Hagrid picked it up and tucked it deep inside his coat. Harry longed to know what it was, but knew better than to ask.
"Come on, back in this infernal cart, and don't talk to me on the way back. It's best if I keep me mouth shut," said Hagrid.
One wild car ride later, they stood blinking in the sunlight outside Gringotts. Harry didn't know where to run first now that he had a bag full of money. He didn't have to know how many galleons there were to a pound to know that he was holding more money than he'd had in his whole life, more money than even Dudley had ever had.
"Might as well get your uniform," said Hagrid, nodding towards Madame Malkin's robes for all occasions. "Listen, Harry, would you mind if I slipped off for a pick-me-up at the Leaky Cauldron? I hate them Gringotts carts."
He did still look a bit sick, so Harry entered Madame Malkin's shop alone, feeling nervous. Madame Malkin was a squat, smiling witch, dressed all in mauve.
"Hogwarts, dear?"
she said when Harry started to speak.
got the lot here. Another young man being fitted up just now, in fact.
In the back of the shop, a boy with a pale, pointed face was standing on a footstool, while a second witch pinned up his long, black robes. Madame Malkin stood Harry on a stool next to him, slipped a long robe over his head, and began to pin it to the right length.
"Hello," said the boy. "Hogwarts, too?"
"Yes," said Harry.
"My father's next door buying my books, and my mother's up the street looking at wands," said the boy.
He had a bored, drawling voice.
"Then I'm going to drag them off to look at racing brooms. I don't see why first years can't have their own. I think I'll bully Father into getting me one, and I'll smuggle it in somehow."
Harry was strongly reminded of Dudley.
"Have you got your own broom?"
the boy went on.
"No," said Harry.
"Play Quidditch at all?"
"No,"
Harry said again, wondering what on earth Quidditch could be.
"I do. Father says it's a crime if I am not picked to play for my house, and I must say I agree. Know what house you'll be in yet?"
"No," said Harry, feeling more stupid by the minute.
"Well, no one really knows until they get there, do they? But I know I'll be in Slytherin. All our family have been. Imagine being in Hufflepuff. I think I'd leave, wouldn't you?"
"Hmm," said Harry, wishing he could say something a bit more interesting.
"I say, look at that man,"
said the boy suddenly, nodding toward the front window. Hagrid was standing there grinning at Harry and pointing at two large ice creams to show he couldn't come in.
"That's Hagrid," said Harry, pleased to know something the boy didn't. "He works at Hogwarts."
"Oh," said the boy, "I've heard of him. He's a sort of servant, isn't he?"
"He's the gamekeeper," said Harry.
He was liking the boy less and less every second.
"Yes, exactly. I heard he's a sort of savage, lives in a hut on the school grounds, and every now and then he gets drunk, tries to do magic, and ends up setting fire to his bed."
"I think he's brilliant," said Harry coldly.
"Do you?" said the boy with a slight sneer. "Why, is he with you? Where are your parents?"
"They're dead," said Harry shortly.
He didn't feel much like going into the matter with this boy.
"Oh, sorry," said the other, not sounding sorry at all. "But they were our kind, weren't they?"
"They were a witch and wizard, if that's what you mean."
"I really don't think they should let the other sort in, do you? They're just not the same. They've never been brought up to know our ways. Some of them have never even heard of Hogwarts until they get the letter. Imagine, I think they should keep it in the old wizarding families. What's your surname, anyway?"
But before Harry could answer, Madame Malkin said,
"That's you done, my dear."
And Harry, not sorry for an excuse to stop talking to the boy, hopped down from the footstool.
"Well, I'll see you at Hogwarts, I suppose," said the drawling boy.
Harry was rather quiet as he ate the ice cream Hagrid had bought him, chocolate and raspberry with chopped nuts.
"What's up?"
said Hagrid.
"Nothing," Harry lied.
They stopped to buy parchment and quills. Harry cheered up a bit when he found a bottle of ink that changed colour as you wrote. When they had left the shop, he said, "Hagrid, what's Quidditch?"
"Blimey, Harry, I keep forgetting how little you know. Not knowing about Quidditch?"
"Don't make me feel worse," said Harry.
He told Hagrid about the pale boy in Madame Malkin's.
"And he said people from Muggle families shouldn't even be allowed in."
"You're not from a Muggle family. If he'd known who you were. He's grown up knowing your name if his parents are wizarding folk. You saw what everybody in the Leaky Cauldron was like when they saw you. Anyway, what does he know about it? Some of the best I ever saw were the only ones with magic in them in a long line of Muggles. Look at your mum. Look what she had for a sister."
"So what is Quidditch?"
"It's our sport. Wizard sport. It's like soccer in the Muggle world. Everyone follows Quidditch. Played up in the air on broomsticks. And there's four balls. Sort of hard to explain the rules."
And what are Slytherin and Hufflepuff?"
"Schoolhouses. There's four. Everyone says Hufflepuff are a lot of duffers, but I bet I'm in Hufflepuff,"
said Harry gloomily.
"'Better Hufflepuff than Slytherin,' said Hagrid darkly. "'There's not a single witch or wizard who went bad who wasn't in Slytherin. "'You know who was one.'
"'Vol, sorry, you know who was at Hogwarts?'
"'Years and years ago,' said Hagrid.
They bought Harry's school books in a shop called Flourish and Blots, where the shelves were stacked to the ceiling with books as long as paving stones bound in leather, books the size of postage stamps in covers of silk, books full of peculiar symbols, and a few books with nothing in them at all. Even Dudley, who never read anything, would have been wild to get his hands on some of these. Hagrid almost had to drag Harry away from curses and counter-curses, bewitch your friends and befuddle your enemies with the latest revenges, hair loss, jelly legs, tongue-tying, and much, much more, by Professor Vindictus Viridian.
I was trying to find out how to curse Dudley. I'm not saying that's not a good idea, but you're not to use magic in the Muggle world, except in very special circumstances, said Hagrid. And anyway, you couldn't work any of them curses yet. You'll need a lot more study before you get to that level.
Hagrid wouldn't let Harry buy a solid gold cauldron either.
It says pewter on your list.
But they got a nice set of scales for weighing potion ingredients and a collapsible brass telescope. And then they visited the apothecary, which was fascinating enough to make up for its horrible smell, a mixture of bad eggs and rotted cabbages. Barrels of slimy stuff stood on the floor, jars of herbs, dried roots and bright powders lined the walls, bundles of feathers, strings of fangs and snarled claws hung from the ceiling. While Hagrid asked the man behind the counter for a supply of some basic potion ingredients for Harry, Harry himself examined silver unicorn horns at 21 galleons each and minuscule glittery black beetle eyes, 5 canuts a scoop. Outside the apothecary, Hagrid checked Harry's list again.
"'Just your wand left. Oh, yeah. And I still haven't got your birthday present.'
Harry felt himself go red. "'You don't have to—'
"'I know I don't have to. Tell you what, I'll get your animal. Not a toad. Toads went out of fashion years ago. You'd be laughed at. And I don't like cats. They make me sneeze. I'll get your an owl. All the kids want owls. They're dead useful. Carry your mail and everything.
20 minutes later, they left Eyelop's Owl Emporium, which had been dark and full of rustling and flickering jewel-bright eyes. Harry now carried a large cage that held a beautiful snowy owl, fast asleep with her head under her wing. He couldn't stop stammering his thanks, sounding just like Professor Quirrell.
"'Don't mention it!' said Hagrid gruffly. "'Don't expect you've had a lot of presents from them Dursleys. Just Ollivanders left now. Only place for wands, Ollivanders, and you've got to have the best wand.'
A magic wand. This was what Harry had been really looking forward to. The last shop was narrow and shabby. Peeling old letters over the door read, "'Ollivanders, makers of fine wands since 382 B.C.' A single wand lay on a faded purple cushion in the dusty window. A tinkling bell rang somewhere in the depths of the shop as they stepped inside. It was a tiny place, empty except for a single spindly chair that Hagrid sat on to wait. Harry felt strangely, as though he had entered a very strict library. He swallowed a lot of new questions that had just occurred to him, and looked instead at the thousands of narrow boxes piled neatly right up to the ceiling. For some reason the back of his neck prickled. The very dust and silence in here seemed to tingle with some secret magic.
"'Good afternoon,' said a soft voice.
Harry jumped. Hagrid must have jumped too, because there was a loud crunching noise, and he got quickly off the spindly chair. An old man was standing before them, his wide, pale eyes shining like moons through the gloom of the shop.
"'Hello?' said Harry awkwardly.
"'Ah, yes,' said the man. "'Yes, yes, I thought I'd be seeing you soon. Harry Potter!'
It wasn't a question.
"'You have your mother's eyes. It seems only yesterday she was in here herself, buying her first wand. 10 1/4 inches long, swishy, made of willow, nice wand for charm work.'
Mr. Ollivander moved closer to Harry. Harry wished he would blink. Those silvery eyes were a bit creepy.
Your father, on the other hand, favoured a mahogany wand, 11 inches, pliable, a little more power and excellent for transfiguration. Well, I say your father favoured it. It's really the wand that chooses the wizard, of course.
Mr. Ollivander had come so close that he and Harry were almost nose to nose. Harry could see himself reflected in those misty eyes.
And that's where...
Mr. Ollivander touched the lightning scar on Harry's forehead with a long white finger.
I'm sorry to say I sold the wand that did it, he said softly. 13.5 inches. You, powerful wand, very powerful, and in the wrong hands. Well, if I'd known what that wand was going out into the world to do...
He shook his head, and then, to Harry's relief, spotted Hagrid.
Rubeus! Rubeus Hagrid! How nice to see you again! Oak, 16 inches, rather bendy, wasn't it?
It was, sir, yes, said Hagrid.
Good one, that one, but I suppose they snapped it in half when you got expelled, said Mr. Ollivander, suddenly stern.
Yes, they did, yes, said Hagrid, shuffling his feet. I still got the pieces, though, he added brightly.
But you don't use them, said Mr. Ollivander sharply.
Oh, no, sir, said Hagrid quickly.
Harry noticed he gripped his pink umbrella very tightly as he spoke.
Said Mr. Ollivander, giving Hagrid a piercing look. Well, now, Mr. Potter, let me see.
He pulled a long tape measure with silver markings out of his pocket.
Which is your wand arm?
Well, I'm right-handed, said Harry.
Hold out your arm, that's it.
He measured Harry from shoulder to finger, then wrist to elbow, shoulder to floor, knee to armpit, and round his head. As he measured, he said,
Every Ollivander wand has a core of a powerful magical substance, Mr. Potter. We use unicorn hairs, phoenix tail feathers, and the heart strings of dragons. No two Ollivander wands are the same. Just as no two unicorns, dragons, or phoenixes are quite the same. And, of course, you will never get such good results with another wizard's wand.
Harry suddenly realized that the tape measure, which was measuring between his nostrils, was doing this on its own. Mr. Ollivander was flitting around the shelves, taking down boxes.
That will do, he said,
and the tape measure crumbled into a heap on the floor.
Right then, Mr. Potter. Try this one. Beechwood and dragon heartstring. 9 inches. Nice and flexible. Just take it and give it a wave.
Harry took the wand and, feeling foolish, waved it around a bit. But Mr. Ollivander snatched it out of his hand almost at once.
Maple and phoenix feather. 7 inches. Quite whippy. Try.
Harry tried, but he had hardly raised the wand when it, too, was snatched back by Mr. Ollivander.
No, no, here, ebony and unicorn hair, 8.5 inches, springy. Go on, try it out.
Harry tried, and tried. He had no idea what Mr. Ollivander was waiting for. The pile of tried wands was mounting higher and higher on the spindly chair, but the more wands Mr. Ollivander pulled from the shelves, the happier he seemed to become.
Tricky customer, eh? Not to worry. We'll find the perfect match here somewhere. I wonder, now, yes, why not? Unusual combination. Holly and phoenix feather. 11 inches, nice and supple.
Harry took the wand. He felt the sudden warmth in his fingers. He raised the wand above his head, brought it swishing down through the dusty air, and a stream of red and gold sparks shot from the end like a firework, throwing dancing spots of light onto the walls. Hagrid whooped and clapped, and Mr. Ollivander cried,
Oh, bravo! Yes, indeed! Oh, very good! Well, 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 how curious, how very curious!
He put Harry's wand back into its box and wrapped it in brown paper, still muttering,
Curious, curious.
Sorry, said Harry, but what's curious? Mr. Ollivander fixed Harry with his pale stare.
"I remember every wand I've ever sold, Mr. Potter. Every single one. It so happens that the phoenix whose tail feather is in your wand gave another feather, just one other. It is very curious indeed that you should be destined for this wand when its brother, why, its brother gave you that scar."
Harry swallowed.
"Yes, 13.5 inches. You. Curious indeed how these things happen. The wand chooses the wizard, remember. I think we must expect great things from you, Mr. Potter. After all, he who must not be named did great things. Terrible, yes, but great."
Harry shivered. He wasn't sure he liked Mr. Ollivander too much. He paid 7 gold galleons for his wand, and Mr. Ollivander borrowed them from his shop. The late afternoon sun hung low in the sky as Harry and Hagrid made their way back down Diagon Alley, back through the wall, back through the leaky cauldron, now empty. Harry didn't speak at all as they walked down the road. He didn't even notice how much people were gawking at them on the underground, laden as they were with all their funny-shaped packages, with the snowy owl asleep in its cage on Harry's lap. Up another escalator, out onto Paddington Station, Harry only realized where they were when Hagrid tapped him on the shoulder.
"Got time for a bite to eat before your train leaves," he said.
He bought Harry a hamburger and they sat down on plastic seats to eat them. Harry kept looking around. Everything looked so strange somehow.
"You all right, Harry? You're very quiet," said Hagrid.
Harry wasn't sure he could explain. He'd just had the best birthday of his life, and yet he chewed his hamburger, trying to find the words. "Everyone thinks I'm special," he said at last. "All those people in the leaky cauldron, Professor Quirrell, Mr. Ollivander, but I don't know anything about magic at all. How can they expect great things? I'm famous, and I can't even remember what I'm famous for. I don't know what happened when the night my parents died." Hagrid leaned across the table. Behind the wild beard and eyebrows, he wore a very kind smile.
"Don't you worry, Harry. You'll learn fast enough. Everyone starts at the beginning at Hogwarts. You'll be just fine. Just be yourself. I know it's hard. You've been singled out, and that's always hard. But you'll have a great time at Hogwarts. I did. Still do, smatter of fact."
Hagrid helped Harry onto the train that would take him back to the Dursleys, then handed him an envelope.
"Your tickets for Hogwarts," he said. "First of September, King's Cross, it's all on your ticket. Any problems with the Dursleys, send me a letter with your owl. She'll know where to find me. See you soon, Harry."
The train pulled out of the station. Harry wanted to watch Hagrid until he was out of sight. He rose in his seat and pressed his nose against the window. But he blinked, and Hagrid had gone. Chapter 6. The Journey from Platform 9¾. Harry's last month with the Dursleys wasn't fun. True, Dudley was now so scared of Harry he wouldn't stay in the same room, while Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon didn't shut Harry in his cupboard, force him to do anything, or shout at him. In fact, they didn't speak to him at all. Half terrified, half furious, they acted as though any chair with Harry in it were empty. Although this was an improvement in many ways, it did become a bit depressing after a while. Harry kept to his room with his new owl for company. He had decided to call her Hedwig, a name he had found in A History of Magic. His school books were very interesting. He lay on his bed reading late into the night, Hedwig swooping in and out of the open window as she pleased. It was lucky that Aunt Petunia didn't come in to vacuum any more, because Hedwig kept bringing back dead mice. Every night before he went to sleep, Harry ticked off another day on a piece of paper he had pinned to the wall, counting down to September 1st. On the last day of August, he thought he'd better speak to his aunt and uncle about getting to King's Cross Station the next day. So he went down to the living room where they were watching a quiz show on television. He cleared his throat to let them know he was there, and Dudley screamed and ran from the room. Uncle Vernon? Uncle Vernon grunted to show he was listening. I need to be at King's Cross tomorrow to go to Hogwarts. Uncle Vernon grunted again. Would it be all right if you gave me a lift? Grunt. Harry supposed that meant yes. Thank you. He was about to go back upstairs when Uncle Vernon actually spoke. Funny way to get to a wizard's school, the train. Magic carpets all got punctures, have they? Harry didn't say anything. Where is this school, anyway? I don't know, said Harry, realizing this for the first time. He pulled the ticket Hagrid had given him out of his pocket. I just take the train from platform 9 3/4 at 11 o'clock, he read. His aunt and uncle stared. Platform what? 9 3/4. Don't talk rubbish, said Uncle Vernon. There is no platform 9 3/4. It's on my ticket. Barking, said Uncle Vernon. Howling mad, the lot of them. You'll see. You just wait. All right, we'll take you to King's Cross. We're going up to London tomorrow anyway, or I wouldn't bother. Why are you going to London? Harry asked, trying to keep things friendly. Taking Dudley to the hospital, growled Uncle Vernon. Got to have that ruddy tail removed before he goes to Smeltings. Harry woke at 5 o'clock the next morning and was too excited and nervous to go back to sleep. He got up and pulled on his jeans, because he didn't want to walk into the station in his wizard's robes. He'd change on the train. He checked his Hogwarts list yet again to make sure he had everything he needed, saw that Hedwig was shut safely in her cage, and then paced the room, waiting for the Dursleys to get up. 2 hours later, Harry's huge, heavy trunk had been loaded into the Dursleys' car. Aunt Petunia had talked Dudley into sitting next to Harry, and they had set off. They reached King's Cross at 10:30. Uncle Vernon dumped Harry's trunk onto a cart and wheeled it into the station for him. Harry thought this was strangely kind until Uncle Vernon stopped dead, facing the platforms with a nasty grin on his face. "Well, there you are, boy. Platform 9. Platform 10. Your platform should be somewhere in the middle, but they don't seem to have built it yet, do they?" He was quite right, of course. There was a big plastic number 9 over one platform, and a big plastic number 10 over the one next to it. And in the middle, nothing at all. "Have a good term," said Uncle Vernon, with an even nastier smile. He left without another word. Harry turned and saw the Dursleys drive away. All three of them were laughing. Harry's mouth went rather dry. What on earth was he going to do? He was starting to attract a lot of funny looks because of Hedwig. He'd have to ask someone. He stopped a passing guard, but didn't dare mention platform 9 3/4. The guard had never heard of Hogwarts, and when Harry couldn't even tell him what part of the country it was in, he started to get annoyed, as though Harry was being stupid on purpose. Getting desperate, Harry asked for the train that left at 11 o'clock, but the guard said there wasn't one. In the end, the guard strode away, muttering about time-wasters. Harry was now trying hard not to panic. According to the large clock over the arrivals board, he had 10 minutes left to get on the train to Hogwarts, and he had no idea how to do it. He was stranded in the middle of a station with a trunk he could hardly lift, a pocket full of wizard money, and a large owl. Hagrid must have forgotten to tell him something you had to do, like tapping the third brick on the left to get into Diagon Alley. He wondered if he should get out his wand and start tapping the ticket inspector's stand between platforms 9 and 10. At that moment, a group of people passed just behind him, and he caught a few words of what they were saying. "Packed with muggles, of course." Harry swung round. The speaker was a plump woman who was talking to 4 boys, all with flaming red hair. Each of them was pushing a trunk like Harry's in front of him, and they had an owl. Heart hammering, Harry pushed his cart after them. They stopped, and so did he, just near enough to hear what they were saying.
"Now, what's the platform number?" said the boy's mother. 9 3/4,
piped a small girl, also red-headed, who was holding her hand. "Mum, can't I go?"
"You're not old enough, Ginny. Now be quiet. All right, Percy, you go first."
What looked like the oldest boy marched towards platform 9 and 10. Harry watched, careful not to blink in case he missed it. But just as the boy reached the dividing barrier between the two platforms, a large crowd of tourists came swarming in front of him, and by the time the last backpack had cleared away, the boy had vanished.
"Fred, you next," the plump woman said.
"I'm not Fred, I'm George," said the boy. "Honestly, woman, you call yourself our mother. Can't you tell I'm George?"
"Sorry, George, dear."
"Only joking. I am Fred," said the boy, and off he went.
His twin called after him to hurry up, and he must have done so, because a second later he had gone. But how had he done it? Now the third brother was walking briskly toward the barrier. He was almost there, and then, quite suddenly, he wasn't anywhere. There was nothing else for it.
"Excuse me," Harry said to the plump woman.
"Hello, dear," she said.
"First time at Hogwarts? Ron's new, too."
She pointed to the last and youngest of her sons. He was tall, thin, and gangling, with freckles, big hands and feet, and a long nose.
"Yes," said Harry. The thing is, I don't know how to get on to the platform," she said kindly, and Harry nodded.
"Not to worry," she said. "All you have to do is to walk straight at the barrier between platforms 9 and 10. Don't stop, and don't be scared you'll crash into it. That's very important. Best do it at a bit of a run if you're nervous. Go on. Go now before Ron."
Okay, said Harry.
He pushed his trolley around and stared at the barrier. It looked very solid. He started to walk towards it. People jostled him on their way to platforms 9 and 10. Harry walked more quickly. He was going to smash right into that barrier, and then he'd be in trouble. Leaning forward on his cart, he broke into a heavy run. The barrier was coming nearer and nearer. He wouldn't be able to stop. The cart was out of control. He was a foot away. He closed his eyes, ready for the crash. It didn't come. He kept on running. He opened his eyes. A scarlet steam engine was waiting next to a platform packed with people. A sign overhead said, "Hogwarts Express, 11 o'clock." Harry looked behind him and saw a wrought iron archway where the barrier had been, with the words "Platform 9 3/4" on it. He had done it. Smoke from the engine drifted over the heads of the chattering crowd, while cats of every colour wound here and there between their legs. Owls hooted to one another in a disgruntled sort of way over the babble and the scraping of heavy trunks. The first few carriages were already packed with students, some hanging out of the window to talk to their families, some fighting over seats. Harry pushed his cart off down the platform in search of an empty seat. He passed a round-faced boy who was saying,
"Gran, I've lost my toad again."
"Oh, Neville," he heard the old woman sigh.
A boy with dreadlocks was surrounded by a small crowd.
"Give us a look, Lee. Go on."
The boy lifted the lid of a box in his arms, and the people around him shrieked and yelled as something inside poked out a long, hairy leg. Harry pressed on through the crowd until he found an empty compartment near the end of the train. He put Hedwig inside first and then started to shove and heave his trunk toward the train door. He tried to lift it up the steps, but could hardly raise one end, and twice he dropped it painfully on his foot.
"Want a hand?"
It was one of the red-haired twins he'd followed through the barrier.
"Yes, please," Harry panted. "Oi, Fred, come here and help."
With the twins' help, Harry's trunk was at last tucked away in a corner of the compartment.
"Thanks," said Harry, pushing his sweaty hair out of his eyes.
"What's that?"
said one of the twins suddenly, pointing at Harry's lightning scar.
"Blimey," said the other twin. "Are you?"
"He is,"
said the first twin.
"Aren't you?"
he added to Harry.
"What?"
said Harry.
"Harry Potter,"
chorused the twins.
"Oh, him," said Harry. "I mean, yes, I am."
The two boys gawked at him, and Harry felt himself turning red. Then, to his relief, a voice came floating in through the train's open door.
"Fred, George, are you there?"
"Coming, Mum."
With a last look at Harry, the twins hopped off the train. Harry sat down next to the window where, half-hidden, he could watch the red-haired family on the platform and hear what they were saying. Their mother had just taken out her handkerchief.
"Ron, you've got something on your nose."
The youngest boy tried to jerk out of the way, but she grabbed him and began rubbing the end of his nose.
"Mom, get off."
He wriggled free.
"Ah, as if Ronnie got something on his nosey,"
said one of the twins.
"Shut up," said Ron.
"Where's Percy?"
said their mother. "He's coming now." The oldest boy came striding into sight. He had already changed into his billowing black Hogwarts robes, and Harry noticed a shiny silver badge on his chest with the letter P on it.
"Can't stay long, Mother," he said. "I'm up front. The prefects have got two compartments to themselves."
"Oh, are you a prefect, Percy?"
said one of the twins with an air of great surprise.
"You should have said something. We had no idea."
"Hang on. I think I remember him saying something about it," said the other twin.
"Once or twice, a minute, all summer."
"Oh, shut up," said Percy the prefect.
"How come Percy gets new robes anyway?" said one of the twins.
"Because he's a prefect," said their mother fondly.
"All right, dear. Well, have a good term. Send me an owl when you get there."
She kissed Percy on the cheek, and he left. Then she turned to the twins.
"Now, you two, this year you behave yourselves. If I get one more owl telling me you've blown up a toilet or..."
"Blown up a toilet?
We've never blown up a toilet.
Great idea, though. Thanks, Mum.
It's not funny. And look after Ron."
"Don't worry. Ickle Ronnikins is safe with us."
"Shut up," said Ron again.
He was almost as tall as the twins already, and his nose was still pink where his mother had rubbed it.
"Hey, Mum, guess what? Guess who we just met on the train?"
Harry leaned back quickly so they couldn't see him looking.
"You know that black-haired boy who was near us in the station? Know who he is?"
"Who?"
"Harry Potter."
Harry heard the little girl's voice.
"Oh, Mum, can I go on the train and see him? Mum, oh, please."
"You've already seen him, Ginny, and the poor boy isn't something you goggle at in a zoo."
"Is he really, Fred? How do you know?"
"Asked him, saw his scar. It's really there, like lightning."
"Poor dear. No wonder he was alone. I wondered he was ever so polite when he asked how to get onto the platform."
"Never mind that. Do you think he remembers what you know who looks like?"
Their mother suddenly became very stern.
"I forbid you to ask him, Fred. Now don't you dare. As though he needs reminding of that on his first day at school."
"All right, keep your hair on."
A whistle sounded.
"Hurry up,"
their mother said, and the three boys clambered onto the train. They leaned out of the window for her to kiss them goodbye, and their younger sister began to cry.
"Don't, Ginny. We'll send you loads of owls."
"We'll send you a Hogwarts toilet seat."
"George!"
"Only joking, Mum."
The train began to move. Harry saw the boy's mother waving and their sister, half laughing, half crying, running to keep up with the train until it gathered too much speed, and then she fell back and waved. Harry watched the girl and her mother disappear as the train rounded the corner. Houses flashed past the window. Harry felt a great leap of excitement. He didn't know what he was going to, but it had to be better than what he was leaving behind. The door of the compartment slid open, and the youngest red-headed boy came in.
"Anyone sitting there?"
he asked, pointing to the seat opposite Harry. "Everywhere else is full." Harry shook his head, and the boy sat down. He glanced at Harry, and then looked quickly out of the window, pretending he hadn't looked. Harry saw he still had a black mark on his nose.
"Hey, Ron!"
The twins were back. "Listen, we're going down the middle of the train. Lee Jordan's got a giant tarantula down there."
"Right," mumbled Ron.
"Harry," said the other twin, "did we introduce ourselves?"
"Fred and George Weasley, and this is Ron, our brother.
See you later, then."
"Bye,"
said Harry and Ron. The twins slid the compartment door shut behind them.
"Are you really Harry Potter?"
Ron blurted out. Harry nodded.
"Oh, well, I thought... it might be one of Fred and George's jokes," said Ron.
"And have you really got, you know..."
He pointed at Harry's forehead. Harry pulled back his bangs to show the lightning scar. Ron stared.
So that's where you know who?
Yes, said Harry, but I can't remember it.
Nothing? Said Ron eagerly.
Well, I remember a lot of green light, but nothing else.
Wow, said Ron.
He sat and stared at Harry for a few moments, and then, as though he had suddenly realized what he was doing, he quickly looked out of the window again. Are all your family wizards? Asked Harry, who found Ron just as interesting as Ron found him.
Yes, I think so, said Ron.
I think Mum's got a second cousin who's an accountant, but we never talk about him. So you must know loads of magic already. The Weasleys were clearly one of those old wizarding families the pale boy in Diagon Alley had talked about.
I heard you went to live with muggles, said Ron. What are they like?
Horrible. Well, not all of them. My aunt and uncle and cousin are, though. Wish I'd had three wizard brothers.
Five, said Ron.
For some reason he was looking gloomy. I'm the sixth in our family to go to Hogwarts. You could say I've got a lot to live up to. Bill and Charlie have already left. Bill was head boy and Charlie was captain of Quidditch. Now Percy's a prefect. Fred and George mess around a lot, but they still get really good marks, and everyone thinks they're really funny. Everyone expects me to do as well as the others, but if I do, it's no big deal, because they did it first. You never get anything new, either, with five brothers. I've got Bill's old robes, Charlie's old wand, and Percy's old rat.
Ron reached inside his jacket and pulled out a fat grey rat, which was asleep.
His name's Scabbers, and he's useless. He hardly ever wakes up. Percy's got an owl from my dad for being made a prefect, but they couldn't I got Scabbers instead.
Ron's ears went pink. He seemed to think he'd said too much, because he went back to staring out of the window.
Harry didn't think there was anything wrong with not being able to afford an owl. After all, he'd never had any money in his life until a month ago, and he told Ron so, all about having to wear Dudley's old clothes and never getting proper birthday presents. This seemed to cheer Ron up.
And until Hagrid told me, I didn't know anything about being a wizard, or about my parents, or Voldemort.
Ron gasped.
What? Said Harry.
You said you know whose name, said Ron, sounding both shocked and impressed.
I'd have thought you, of all people.
I'm not trying to be brave or anything, saying the name, said Harry. I just never knew you shouldn't. See what I mean?
I've got loads to learn.
I bet, he added, voicing for the first time something that had been worrying him a lot lately, I bet I'm the worst in the class.
You won't be. There's loads of people who come from muggle families, and they learn quick enough.
While they had been talking, the train had carried them out of London. Now they were speeding past fields full of cows and sheep. They were quiet for a time, watching the fields and lanes flick past. Around 12:30, there was a great clattering outside in the corridor, and a smiling, dimpled woman slid back their door and said,
"Anything off the cart, dears?"
Harry, who hadn't had any breakfast, leapt to his feet, but Ron's ears went pink again, and he muttered that he'd brought sandwiches. Harry went out into the corridor. He had never had any money for candy with the Dursleys, and now that he had pockets rattling with gold and silver, he was ready to buy as many Mars bars as he could carry. But the woman didn't have Mars bars. What she did have were Bertie Bott's Every Flavour Beans, Drubal's Best Blowing Gum, Chocolate Frogs, Pumpkin Pasties, Cauldron Cakes, Licorice Wands, and a number of other strange things Harry had never seen in his life. Not wanting to miss anything, he got some of everything and paid the woman 11 silver sickles and 7 bronze canuts. Ron stared as Harry brought it all back into the compartment and tipped it onto an empty seat.
"Hungry, are you?"
"Starving," said Harry, taking a large bite out of a pumpkin pasty. Ron had taken out a lumpy package and unwrapped it. There were 4 sandwiches inside. He pulled one of them apart and said, "She always forgets I don't like corned beef."
"Swap you for one of these," said Harry, holding up a pasty.
"Go on."
"You don't want this. It's all dry," said Ron.
"She hasn't got much time," he added quickly, "you know, with 5 of us." go on. Have a pasty, said Harry, who had never had anything to share before, or indeed anyone to share it with. It was a nice feeling, sitting there with Ron, eating their way through all Harry's pasties, cakes, and candies. The sandwiches lay forgotten. What are these? Harry asked Ron, holding up a pack of chocolate frogs. They're not really frogs, are they? He was starting to feel that nothing would surprise him.
No, said Ron, but see what the card is. I'm missing a gripper.
What? Oh, of course, you wouldn't know. Chocolate frogs have cards inside them, you know, to collect. Famous witches and wizards. I've got about 500, but I haven't got a gripper or Ptolemy. Harry unwrapped his chocolate frog and picked up the card. It showed a man's face. He wore half-moon glasses, had a long, crooked nose, and flowing silver hair, beard, and moustache. Underneath the picture was the name Albus Dumbledore.
So this is Dumbledore, said Harry.
Don't tell me you've never heard of Dumbledore, said Ron.
Can I have a frog? I might get a gripper.
Thanks.
Harry turned over his card and read, Albus Dumbledore, currently headmaster of Hogwarts. Considered by many the greatest wizard of modern times, Dumbledore is particularly famous for his defeat of the dark wizard Grindelwald in 1945, for the discovery of the 12 uses of dragon's blood, and his work on alchemy with his partner Nicholas Flamel. Professor Dumbledore enjoys chamber music and ten-pin bowling. Harry turned the card back over and saw, to his astonishment, that Dumbledore's face had disappeared.
"He's gone."
"Well, you can't expect him to hang around all day," said Ron. "He'll be back. Now, I've got Morgana again, and I've got about 6 of her. Do you want it? You can start collecting."
Ron's eyes strayed to the pile of chocolate frogs waiting to be unwrapped.
"Help yourself," said Harry. "But in, you know, the Muggle world, people just stay put in photos."
"Do they?
What, they don't move at all?"
Ron sounded amazed.
Weird.
Harry stared as Dumbledore sidled back into the picture on his card and gave him a small smile. Ron was more interested in eating the frogs than looking at the famous witches and wizards cards, but Harry couldn't keep his eyes off them. Soon he had not only Dumbledore and Morgana, but Hengist of Woodcroft, Alberic Grunion, Circe, Paracelsus, and Merlin. He finally tore his eyes away from the druidess Cleodna, who was scratching her nose, to open a bag of Bertie Bott's every flavour beans. "You want to be careful with those," Ron warned Harry. "When they say every flavour, they mean every flavour. You know, you get all the ordinary ones, like chocolate and peppermint and marmalade, but then you can get spinach and liver and tripe. George reckons he had a booger-flavoured one once." Ron picked up a green bean, looked at it carefully, and bit into a corner.
Blah! See? Sprouts.
They had a good time eating the every-flavour beans. Harry got toast, coconut, baked beans, strawberry, curry, grass, coffee, sardine, and was even brave enough to nibble off the end of a funny grey one Ron wouldn't touch, which turned out to be pepper. The countryside now flying past the window was becoming wilder. The neat fields had gone. Now there were woods, twisting rivers, and dark green hills. There was a knock on the door of their compartment, and the round-faced boy Harry had passed on platform 9 3/4 came in. He looked tearful.
"Sorry," he said, "but have you seen a toad at all?"
When they shook their heads, he wailed,
"I've lost him. He keeps getting away from me."
"He'll turn up," said Harry.
"Yes," said the boy miserably. "Well, if you see him..."
He left. "Don't know why he's so bothered," said Ron. "If I'd bought a toad, I'd lose it as quick as I could. Mind you, I bought Scabbers, so I can't talk." The rat was still snoozing on Ron's lap. "He might have died, and you wouldn't know the difference," said Ron in disgust. "I tried to turn him yellow yesterday to make him more interesting, but the spell didn't work. I'll show you, look." He rummaged around in his trunk and pulled out a very battered-looking wand. It was chipped in places, and something white was glinting at the end. Unicorn hairs nearly poking out. Anyway, he had just raised his wand when the compartment door slid open again. The toadless boy was back, but this time he had a girl with him. She was already wearing her new Hogwarts robes.
"Has anyone seen a toad? Neville's lost one,"
she said. She had a bossy sort of voice, lots of bushy brown hair, and rather large front teeth. "We've already told him we haven't seen it," said Ron. But the girl wasn't listening. She was looking at the wand in his hand.
"Oh, are you doing magic? Let's see it, then."
She sat down. Ron looked taken aback. All right." He cleared his throat. "Sunshine, daisies, butter mellow, turn this stupid fat rat yellow." He waved his wand, but nothing happened. Scabbers stayed grey and fast asleep.
"Are you sure that's a real spell?" said the girl. "Well, it's not very good, is it? I've tried a few simple spells just for practice, and it's all worked for me. Nobody in my family's magic at all. It was ever such a surprise when I got my letter, but I was ever so pleased, of course. I mean, it's the very best school of witchcraft there is, I've heard. I've learnt all our course books by heart, of course. I just hope it will be enough. I'm Hermione Granger, by the way. Who are you?"
She said all this very fast. Harry looked at Ron and was relieved to see, by his stunned face, that he hadn't learnt all the course books by heart either. "I'm Ron Weasley," Ron muttered.
"Harry Potter," said Harry. "Are you really?" said Hermione. "I know all about you, of course. I got a few extra books for background reading, and you're in Modern Magical History, and The Rise and Fall of the Dark Arts, and Great Wizarding Events of the 20th Century."
"Am I?" said Harry, feeling dazed.
"Goodness, didn't you know? I'd have found out everything I could if it was me," said Hermione. "Do either of you know what house you'll be in? I've been asking around, and I hope I'm in Gryffindor. It sounds by far the best. I hear Dumbledore himself was in it, but I suppose Ravenclaw wouldn't be too bad. Anyway, we'd better go and look for Neville's toad. You two had better change. You know I expect we'll be there soon."
And she left, taking the toadless boy with her.
"Whatever house I'm in, I hope she's not in it," said Ron.
He threw his wand back into his trunk. "Stupid spell. George gave it to me. Bet he knew it was a dud." "What house are your brothers in?" asked Harry.
"Gryffindor," said Ron.
Gloom seemed to be settling on him again. "Mum and Dad were in it, too. I don't know what they'll say if I'm not. I don't suppose Ravenclaw would be too bad, but imagine if they put me in Slytherin."
"That's the house you know who was in."
"Yeah," said Ron. He flopped back into his seat, looking depressed. "You know, I think the ends of Scabbers' whiskers are a bit lighter," said Harry, trying to take Ron's mind off houses.
"So, what do your oldest brothers do now they've left anyway?"
Harry was wondering what a wizard did once he'd finished school.
"Charlie's in Romania studying dragons, and Bill's in Africa doing something for Gringotts," said Ron.
"Did you hear about Gringotts? It's been all over the Daily Prophet, but I don't suppose you get that with the Muggles. Someone tried to rob a high-security vault."
Harry stared. "Really? What happened to them?"
"Nothing. That's why it's such big news. They haven't been caught. My dad says it must have been a powerful dark wizard to get round Gringotts, but they don't think they took anything. That's what's odd. Of course, everyone gets scared when something like this happens, in case you know who's behind it."
Harry turned this news over in his mind. He was starting to get a prickle of fear every time "you know who" was mentioned. He supposed this was all part of entering the magical world, but it had been a lot more comfortable saying Voldemort without worrying.
"What's your Quidditch team?" Ron asked.
I don't know any," Harry confessed.
"What?" Ron looked dumbfounded. "Oh, you wait, it's the best game in the world." And he was off, explaining all about the four balls and the position of the seven players, describing famous games he'd been to with his brothers and the broomsticks he'd like to get if he had the money. He was just taking Harry through the finer points of the game when the compartment door slid open yet again. But it wasn't Neville, the toadless boy, or Hermione Granger this time.
Three boys entered, and Harry recognized the middle one at once. It was the pale boy from Madame Malkin's robe shop. He was looking at Harry with a lot more interest than he'd shown back in Diagon Alley.
"Is it true," he said, "they're saying all down the train that Harry Potter's in this compartment? So it's you, is it?"
"Yes," said Harry. He was looking at the other boys.
Both of them were thick-set and looked extremely mean. Standing on either side of the pale boy, they looked like bodyguards.
"Oh, this is Crab and this is Goyle," said the pale boy carelessly, noticing where Harry was looking. "And my name's Malfoy, Draco Malfoy."
Ron gave a slight cough, which might have been hiding a snigger. Draco Malfoy looked at him.
"Think my name's funny, do you? No need to ask who you are. My father told me all the Weasleys have red hair, freckles, and more children than they can afford."
He turned back to Harry.
"You'll soon find out some wizarding families are much better than others, Potter. You don't want to go making friends with the wrong sort. I can help you there."
He held out his hand to shake Harry's, but Harry didn't take it.
"I think I can tell who the wrong sort are for myself, thanks," he said coolly.
Draco Malfoy didn't go red, but a pink tinge appeared in his pale cheeks.
"I'd be careful if I were you, Potter," he said slowly. "Unless you're a bit politer, you'll go the same way as your parents. They didn't know what was good for them either. You hang around with riffraff like the Weasleys and that Hagrid, and it'll rub off on you."
Both Harry and Ron stood up.
"Say that again," Ron said, his face as red as his hair. "Oh, you're going to fight us, are you?"
Malfoy sneered.
"Unless you get out now," said Harry, more bravely than he felt, because Crabbe and Goyle were a lot bigger than him or Ron. "But we don't feel like leaving, do we, boys? We've eaten all our food, and you still seem to have some."
Goyle reached toward the chocolate frogs next to Ron. Ron leapt forward, but before he'd so much as touched Goyle, Goyle let out a horrible yell. Scabbers the rat was hanging off his finger. Sharp little teeth sunk deep into Goyle's knuckle. Crabbe and Malfoy backed away as Goyle swung Scabbers round and round, howling, and when Scabbers finally flew off and hit the window, all three of them disappeared at once. Perhaps they thought there were more rats lurking among the sweets, or perhaps they'd heard footsteps, because a second later Hermione Granger had come in.
"What has been going on?"
she said, looking at the sweets all over the floor, and Ron picking up Scabbers by his tail.
"I think he's been knocked out," Ron said to Harry.
He looked closer at Scabbers.
"No, I don't believe it. He's gone back to sleep."
And so he had.
"You've met Malfoy before?"
Harry explained about their meeting in Diagon Alley.
"I've heard of his family," said Ron darkly. "They were some of the first to come back to our side after you-know-who disappeared. Said they'd been bewitched. My dad doesn't believe it. He says Malfoy's father didn't need an excuse to go over to the dark side."
He turned to Hermione.
"Can we help you with something?
You'd better hurry up and put your robes on. I've just been up to the front to ask the conductor, and he says we're nearly there. You haven't been fighting, have you? You'll be in trouble before we even get there."
"Scabbers has been fighting, not us," said Ron, scowling at her.
"Would you mind leaving while we change?" "All right. I only came in here because people outside are behaving very childishly, racing up and down the corridors," said Hermione in a sniffy voice. "And you've got dirt on your nose, by the way, did you know?"
Ron glared at her as she left. Harry peered out of the window. It was getting dark. He could see mountains and forests under a deep purple sky. The train did seem to be slowing down. He and Ron took off their jackets and pulled on their long black robes. Ron's were a bit short for him. You could see his sneakers underneath them. A voice echoed through the train.
"We will be reaching Hogwarts in 5 minutes' time. Please leave your luggage on the train. It will be taken to the school separately."
Harry's stomach lurched with nerves, and Ron, he saw, looked pale under his freckles. They crammed their pockets with the last of the sweets and joined the crowd thronging the corridor. The train slowed right down and finally stopped. People pushed their way toward the door and out onto a tiny dark platform. Harry shivered in the cold night air. Then a lamp came bobbing over the heads of the students, and Harry heard a familiar voice.
"First years! First years over here! All right there, Harry?"
Hagrid's big hairy face beamed over the sea of heads.
"Come on, follow me. Any more first years? Mind your step now. First years, follow me."
Slipping and stumbling, they followed Hagrid down what seemed to be a steep, narrow path. It was so dark on either side of them that Harry thought there must be thick trees there. Nobody spoke much. Neville, the boy who kept losing his toad, sniffed once or twice.
"You'll get your first sight of Hogwarts